open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Electronically produced music is one possibility of tomorrow's world.
He sits alone, waiting for suggestions. He's so nervous, he's avoiding all the questions. His lips are dry, her heart is gently pounding. Don't you just know exactly what they're thinking?
If you want one more thing, do you think I'm sexy?
Come on, sugar, let me know.
If you really need me, just reach out and touch me.
Come on, honey, tell me.
Shy, looking for an answer. Come on, honey, let's spend the night together. Now hold on a minute before we go much further. Give me a dime so I can phone my mother. They catch a cab to his high-rise apartment. At last he can tell her exactly what his heart meant.
If you want one more thing, do you think I'm sexy?
Come on, sugar, let me know.
If you really need me, just reach out and touch me.
Come on, honey, tell me.
They wake at dawn as all the birds are singing. Two total strangers, but that ain't what they're thinking. Outside it's cold, it's misty and it's raining. They guard each other.
Good morning, Cascadia. Radio Free Cascadia, that is. Today is Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018, and you're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. Weather today, well, it's going to be mostly clear skies throughout the day, highs in the mid-60s and overnight lows, low 50s. Pretty much the same tomorrow, with the sky starting to cloud up and prepare to rain for the rest of the week. And that said, weather for Cascadia. Oh, this is also important, because what we put into our collective air returns to us in increasingly surprising forms. We're going to forego the Kavanaugh investigation today. We know he lied. We know he perjured himself on a number of different occasions before any of this happened. We know that he perjured himself in 2004, again in 2006, and that he was, 2004, 2006, when he was coming up for this judgeship, he was rated as in their rating systems as mediocre at best. It was a struggle just to get up to mediocre. And then, and that's where he hung while he was a judge. Comes the potential appointment to the Supreme Court. And all of a sudden, some bright light behind Kavanaugh said, hey, wait a minute, the rating. He can't be on the Supreme Court unless he has the highest gold standard rating. So what happens? Bang, August 28th. All of a sudden, Kavanaugh is rated, has made the highest rating. it seems a little close, issue with Dr. Ford, that she brought up her accusations right on the eve of Kavanaugh's appointment, just thus throwing a wrench in the works, that although she actually, it was July 6th when she started trying to get her story out, but in so the accusations regarding Dr. Ford are not based on reality, whereas accusations which did not come to light in the media at all regarding Kavanaugh's rating, those are real. That's on paper. That's you can take it to the bank. Oh, I love that phrase right now. But you can, and nobody did. But it is important to mention that Kavanaugh, at the very last minute, achieved the highest possible rating a judge could have. Don't forget that he perjured himself on many occasions beforehand, and it should not have been. He should have been impeached for that, and he should never have been a judge at all. So that said, okay, Kavanaugh taken care of. But meanwhile, while all of this is happening, don't forget Standing Rock. Remember Standing Rock? It's not a drinking game. Standing Rock really took place. And one of the high point of the political actions, the resistance, the high point of civil disobedience was people coordinating at four different points. They were known as the Val Turners. They alerted the company and at exactly the same moment, they turned the valves, shutting off the pipelines. Val Turner's trial is coming up on October 8th. That is Monday. And we have none other than Benjamin Doldersma, who is one of the defendants. He's on the line right now with us. Good morning. Good morning, Benjamin. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Chris. My pleasure to be here.
We are. I deeply admire the actions of the Minnesota Val Turners. It as let's just mention Annette, Emily, and Ben. The climate necessity defense is what they're basing this on. And they're going before a Clearwater County jury on Monday. I want to just turn this over to you and talk a little bit, if you could just refresh listeners' memory what you did, and then we want to talk a little bit more about the necessity defense. But first, what actually happened, the events of the day?
Yeah, that's right. So 2 years ago, the trial, the day, October 11th, 2016 was the day of the action. And it'll actually be 2 years to the day if the trial goes according to schedule when we're receiving our verdict, which is kind of an interesting sort of timeline. But yeah, 2 years ago, we across four states, five pipelines, there was five valve turners, we call them. And then I was one of the people who was in the support role. And we shut down the five tar sands crude oil pipelines from Alberta that come into the U.S., totaling about 2.8 million barrels of oil, 15% of the U.S. oil supply. And we were, you know, taken, or the five valve turners were taken away into custody. Some of the documentarians who were with us, videographers, were taken away as well, and locked up. And I was one of the ones who went free until my charges came in the mail about 3 months later.
So the trial, the defense, is a necessity defense. Can we talk a little bit about the environment? In the brief 2 years since the action took place, we've seen the climate globally. There have been alarming changes. As a farmer, I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. I've literally felt it with my hands. The extraordinary change, the rate of climate collapse right now is just staggering, and most people seem unaware of it. Unless you actually work outside every day, it's difficult really to comprehend what's happening. So in the 2 years, given that fact alone, And I will defend the use of the word fact in this case. Can you talk a little bit about the necessity defense, how other instances when this is being used, and its general legal efficacy, especially given the rapid rate of climate change right now?
That's right. It's so important. So we actually had, this is the last of the trials across the four states. We had a trial and then a retrial in Washington State for Ken Ward, Leonard Higgins in Montana, and Michael Foster in North Dakota. And none of those judges allowed those defendants to raise this defense. Our judge, you know, for whatever reason, made that decision to do so here in Minnesota. And we actually flew out a year ago. He had us meet him in person. He wanted to hear us sort of from our own mouths why we felt it was necessary when he was making that decision to allow us, because the defense is judges tend not to like to use the defense because it can, you know, it kind of allows you to commit a legally and knowingly commit a crime, which, you know, makes the judicial process a little more complicated. But he wanted to hear it. And I think the timing of hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria, so we were there in August, and they kind of just came in back to back right after we gave him our testimony. And so I think that somebody who is a reasonable person, a rational person, who is somewhat open to the possibility that this is, that, you know, that climate change is real, and maybe looking to learn more about it, and they had heard our testimony, he had heard our testimony, and then those hurricanes kind of all come in, and he made the decision to allow it. It's the first time in the U.S. that we've had a judge issue a written necessity defense sort of to allow it in the court in a written motion, a written ruling. And the prosecution appealed it, and it went to the state court of appeals in Minnesota. They upheld the trial judge's motion, which is in our favor, and then the prosecutor appealed it again to the Minnesota State Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court turned down with a one line, basically saying, why are you wasting our time? This is, you know, this is a valid ruling. So already we've actually, you know, we've established some pretty significant legal precedents in, you know, for the state of Minnesota. And it's very important, because what it does is, and if we can use this defense and actually get acquitted during our trial next week, you know, that kind of opens up, you know, a structure in which other people who are doing organizing around climate and trying to fight off some of these terrible pipelines and the devastating effects that they'll have if we start, you know, consuming even more oil at a time when we need to be using far, far less oil, you know, they'll have another mechanism or another defense.
Well, you set a really important legal precedent. Benjamin, we're completely out of time, and I cannot thank you enough. I want to check it back with you, and if you know, feel free, please call in when things start to pop on a Monday. We all will be thinking about this, talking about it, and making a loud noise right in the face of mainstream media. So we've got first.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much for being with us. Just really briefly, Louisiana's first felony trespass arrest that came on August 9th. And in Louisiana, the Bayou Bridge construction, they were charged under a new law. So we've got a new law here.